Well, anybody else have a high dive moment like that in your life? Yeah, a few hands. I feel like my high dive was way higher than that. And I don't know about you, but I went and stood out at the end of the high dive and it was like, no, I'm not doing this. And then I turned around and the entire ladder is full of kids and you can't go back that way. There's only one way down. And it was not fun the first time. I will just say that. I'm thrilled you're here with us today at all of our Atlanta area locations across the country, around the world. It's amazing to be able to be connected with you. We're kicking off a brand new series today. And I just want to start with this. I think it's the most amazing time in human history to be alive. I don't know about you. It doesn't sound like too many of you are that excited about it, but there are numerous modern conveniences that have been invented just in the last 125 years that have radically transformed the way we live life. As a matter of fact, these are things that are like, they're so common we forget about them, like electricity and indoor plumbing and heating and air conditioning and home appliances, telephones, television, transportation, healthcare. These are the things that are just sort of like we assume and we take them for granted all the time. And not to mention all the recent technology. I mean, we think about those things like in the last 2 to 3 decades. I mean, computers and the internet and smartphones, digital music, streaming services, online banking, e-commerce, the global supply chain that puts things at your doorstep when you click for it is amazing. And these have made life dramatically easier, more efficient, and more comfortable. Which comfort, by the way, interestingly enough, is something that humanity gravitates towards normally. I mean, this is something that we desire, we crave, and we have the capacity to create it with no real end in sight, by the way. And it's accelerating in the way this is happening. In fact, we've talked about this before, but our imagination is how we do this. Humans are the only living species that has the ability for imagination, which is basically the ability to hold unreality and reality in our mind at the same time. And to work together to bring unreality into reality, things that did not exist into reality in the world. And most of what was beyond the imagination, the human imagination, just over a century ago is commonplace today. As a matter of fact, just over 100 years ago, in America, in the average home, people did not wake up and take a warm shower. And last week, I was sitting in a big metal tube flying through the sky, watching a guy lose his mind as we were on an airplane because the Wi-Fi was unacceptably slow. This is the world in which we live. The amount of comfort and convenience we experience is extraordinary. Here's what I want to talk about. At what cost? At what cost? I mean, physically, we live in temperature or climate-controlled environments. Many of us sit most of the day, and this is well-documented. Life doesn't require much physical exertion as much as it did in the past. Instead of being hunters and gatherers, we're click and shippers. That's what we do. We click and ship. We don't hunt and gather. And we most of everything we can do is so convenient and so easy, and the lack of movement and challenge in our life has created health issues, obesity, chronic pain, a lack of physical strength, weaker immune systems. These are all common, but it's not just physical. There's mental and emotional costs as well. I mean, the truth is because we're sheltered from fear, specifically fear of death. And I know some of you, this is hard for you to embrace, but we live in a safer time in history than ever before. And it's extraordinary how much we don't have to worry about our general safety on a regular basis. But the safety and uncertainty, we don't deal with boredom like people used to do. And so because of that, the constant entertainment that we experience through social media and digital connectivity, it keeps our minds occupied. The problem is it prevents deeper reflection and deeper connection and emotional growth. And again, this is all has to do with the fact that we live in such a comfortable society. And life is arguably more engaging and more entertaining and easier than ever before. Yet strangely, there's a cost. And part of the cost is that anxiety and the feeling of being overwhelmed is on the rise, which seems like an absolute dichotomy. It's like, how is that possible? If life's easier and not as scary and we're safer and things are more convenient, why are we so stressed out? Why are we so anxious? Why are we so overwhelmed? And here's why. is because as we've experienced fewer problems, we don't become more satisfied. We don't become healthier. What happens is we simply lower the threshold on what we consider a problem. Things to people 100 or 150 years ago, things that are problems to us, they would look at and be like, I mean, that's common life. And wow, you have it way easier than we do. And what we've done, again, as a human species, and some of you have read Michael Easter's book. He wrote a book called The Comfort Crisis. And he talks all about this. And he talks about the fact that as our world gets better, and as we become more resourced, we become more insulated. And without the regular resistance that we would normally face, as that decreases, it makes us less resilient. So it goes like this. Increased comfort and decreased challenge increases complacency and decreases resilience. And this is happening. It's happening right in front of us. It's invisible, but it's happening right in front of us every day. And in the absence of ongoing real challenges in life, because this is what we do, we want to be insulated from those things. We want to insulate our kids from these types of things. In the absence of this ongoing real challenge and difficulty in our society, as that decreases, as a society, we are far less prepared to face the real intense difficulties and struggles that life brings our way. Because life is challenging. And this is something, if you've been around faith for very long, if you've been around the Bible, you know this. You can't escape this. And Jesus promised it. Probably his most unpopular promise. I've never seen a poll on his promises, but probably his most unpopular promise is this one. And I want you to fill in the blank at all of our locations, wherever you are. I want you to audibly join with me. If you know the answer, if you know the fill in the blank, I want you to finish it with me. In this world, you will have trouble. It's not like he disguised it. It's not like he said, hey, I've come. All your problems are gone. And early Jesus followers, they knew this. They were not unfamiliar with difficulties and crisis and challenge and trials. Except we live in a world where, because of our means, we're able to innovate out of a lot of those things in our life. We're able to escape a lot of those things. We're able to insulate ourselves to a lot of those difficulties and things that we would consider inconveniences. But Jesus' followers were so attuned to this, and it was so commonplace in their world that encouraged in the midst of struggles, it dominates the pages of the New Testament. Constantly, the writers of the New Testament are saying, take heart, press on, fear not, maintain hope. And interestingly, one of those New Testament authors, the brother of the one who made this promise, he takes on this idea of how we should face challenges and difficulties, and he takes it on head on, and he reframes it. And you may have heard these verses before, but I'm going to ask you to not run ahead, because I want to try to reintroduce them in a way maybe you've not heard it before. James, the half-brother of Jesus, who was nowhere to be found during Jesus' ministry. You've heard Andy talk about this. I love it when he points this out. He might be the greatest proof that Jesus was who he said he was. I mean, and specifically that he did what he said he did in terms of the resurrection. Because James is nowhere to be found, not even during his public ministry, not even during his public execution. He wasn't even there at his brother's crucifixion. That's why Jesus asked John to take care of his mom. But somehow you turn the page, and on the other side of the crucifixion, something happened. And James emerges as the leader of the church in Jerusalem. And it's in the midst of the most difficult circumstances, in the midst of intense persecution. And the only explanation is he saw his risen brother after the crucifixion. He knew he died, and then he saw him alive, and he's like, you are who you said you were. And it was famous that Jesus' hometown, his family, they weren't supportive. They weren't sure that they believed him. But here's how James introduces himself in his letter. He says, James, a servant of God, and my brother, the Lord Jesus Christ. He's not just my brother, he's now my Lord. He's writing to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. If you're wondering what these 12 tribes are about, if maybe you're new to the Bible, you're just always wondered. This is the 12 tribes that came from the 12 sons of Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they were the patriarchs of the Hebrew faith. Jacob had 12 sons, and those 12 sons turned into 12 tribes of people as the people of God expanded. And those 12 tribes, among those people were people who chose to be followers of Jesus, and they were scattered. And James, being a good Hebrew boy and a scholar, he's writing to the believers that are scattered all over in different nations. And here's his opening. He says, greetings. Now, lengthy greetings were far more customary. If you look at the Apostle Paul, he uses lengthy greetings all the time. James, he dives straight in, and he dives into the deep end. He says, greetings. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of many kinds. It's like, hello. Like, I imagine, you know, it's like, that, you know, these people are scattered all out. The letter comes. It's copied. It's distributed. They get to their house church. There's a group of them together. We got a letter from James. Everybody huddle around. They open it up. It's like, greetings. You're having a hard time. Be happy. It's like, what? He's like, yeah, you're not going to feel this way. That's why he doesn't say feel pure joy. He says, look, you're not going to feel this. It's not something you feel, but you should consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. And this word face trials, it actually insinuates this is something you've fallen into. It's something that's happened to you, not something you did necessarily, but it's happened to you. When those things happen and you face challenges and difficulties, especially ones beyond your control, this is the mental challenge he's giving us, is to regard these trials as a source of something good. And here's why. He assumes they know this, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. That when your faith is tested, you actually grow, you persevere more. Now, a test, as you know, is generally a means of determining the substance of something or the strength of something. When it comes to tests you take in school, it's testing the strength of your knowledge. When it comes to testing a structure, like a bridge or a foundation, it's testing the soundness of that structure. When it comes to your strength, your physical strength, different types of tests. Some of you remember the presidential physical fitness test, where they're trying to create a baseline of physical fitness. I just dated myself, I'm sure. But you know, that was to test a baseline of your strength. Yeah, how many CrossFitters, by the way? You got any CrossFitters in the room? CrossFitters, come on, be proud at all campuses. Okay, raise your hands. We already know you're CrossFitters. Like, it's obvious. Like, we've seen your Instagram, and we see you. And I'm not hating, by the way. I'm not hating on CrossFitters. I used to be one. I just aged out. Like, I can't do it anymore. So there's an annual test, by the way. I don't know if you knew this, for CrossFitters. And they willingly submit themselves to this. It's called MRF. And it happens over Memorial Day weekend. And every year over Memorial weekend, there's this same workout of the day, as they call it. And the MRF is this. It's a one-mile run. And by the way, it's to honor a fallen Lieutenant Michael Murphy, who was killed in action in Afghanistan in 05. And so every year, this is the same workout everybody does. CrossFitters all over the world, they do this workout. There's a one-mile run, 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, and then a mile run. Yes, all at one time. You do all of that at one time. And if you do it right, you have to wear a 20-pound weighted vest. Now, when I was doing CrossFit, I did this whole workout. I did not do it with the weighted vest because I felt like I had a built-in 20-pound weighted vest. And I didn't need to put 20 more pounds on. I needed to lose 20 pounds. So I already had those 20 pounds. Nobody bought that. But this is a test. And you, if you've ever done this, you see quickly. Like, it's a test that, like, some people are passing the test and some people are really struggling to get through the test. But here's what I'll tell you. And every time I did it, which is only two, but I struggled through the test. I struggled through the test. But I'll tell you what happened when I got to the end. And you think back to what you did and the amount of time it took you, you're like, man, I just did something. And I felt stronger. I felt stronger mentally. I felt stronger physically. And the truth is that's what happens when you pass a test, when you experience a test. And some of you have experienced tests like this relationally and professionally. And when you experience tests like that and you get through it, you persevere to the end of it. You grow. You get stronger. And in this case, James is talking about faith, that there are tests for our faith that require perseverance. And trials, specifically, he says, trials test our confidence in God. The trials that we face, the ones that Jesus, his brother, said were inevitable, James says, look, even the unexpected, the unwanted, the undeserved trials, they can be productive. They can be beneficial. So beneficial. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to consider it as good. I know that sounds crazy, but you should look at it joyfully, because It's productive. It could produce something great if you persevere. Now, this is important. God doesn't expect perfect faith. If that's the test, none of us passes the test. But what James is saying honors God is persevering faith. Persevering faith honors God. Perfect faith is not something any of us are capable of. But claiming a faith in God in the absence of adversity, that impresses no one. You know this, when people show up and they're like, oh, I'm just praising God and everything's going good in their life and there's no bumps, there's no difficulties. Like, that's not impressive to anyone. When somebody shows up in the midst of difficulty and they're going, God, you're great and I need help and I need you to come to my rescue, but I honor you in the midst of this, and they have an enduring faith and they choose to do the next right thing in the middle of that. When their faith that hasn't gotten a yes from God, faith like that is nothing compared to a faith that gets a no, or gets a not yet, or gets no answer to their prayers, but it endures anyway. That type of faith, James is saying, that not only honors God, it's actually good for you. When you face trials and difficulty, it has a way of producing a persevering faith like nothing else. But there's more. He says, let perseverance finish its work. It's working. This perseverance, when you're persevering in the midst of a trial, it's working. Don't run away. Don't walk away from the situation. Don't quit. Don't give up. If you do, you'll miss out. Perseverance is doing some work, and it's not done yet. Perseverance in the midst of a trial or in the midst of a test, that sort of insinuates a struggle or resistance. It insinuates tension, which we don't like. And when we experience tension, that's what we're trying to insulate ourselves from. That's why we create comfort and conveniences, is when we run into a tension, we try to innovate, we try to get around, we try to work around those things. James is saying, let the tension do its work. It's actually working and you don't realize it. Don't try to escape it. Don't try to vacate it. At times you're going to try to medicate it, but don't do that. If you do that, the tension, it won't work. And it won't work for what? He says, so that, let the perseverance finish its work, so that, which is just a purpose clause. It's saying, here's the reason you want to let perseverance finish its work. You want to get through it, and you want to get through it and maintain your faith. It's so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. Now, there's something interesting going on here in the original language. There's actually a word play. It's sort of a play on words that's happening between this word finish and complete. He's talking about growing, and he's talking about maturing. This word finish and this word complete, they're the exact same Greek word. And it's the word teleos. And teleos is a unique word. It looks like this. I'm going to try and spell it correctly. Teleos looks like this. And basically, this means brought to its end. Not like died, but brought to its end in terms of completed. Or brought to the end of its purpose. It really means fulfilled. It's fulfilled its purpose. It's gotten to the end. So he's saying, look, when you experience these trials and you press through it, you have to press through it so that it fulfills its purpose. It's not exactly like this, but it's the play on words is something like completed perseverance leads you to becoming personally completed. Completed perseverance leads you to being personally completed. See, this is about growing and maturing and fulfilling your greatest potential. It's James's way of saying, look, if you're willing to accept and embrace the challenges and the trials and the tests and the difficulties that life is going to bring your way, because you embrace them because you know it's a necessary part of what you need to grow, to become all of who or what you could be. And what you could be, by the way, for you to be brought to the end to which God originally designed you and created, for you to get to that place, it's way more than you think. You're capable. Your potential is far beyond what you think it is. It's way more than you know. And James is saying, this is what God's up to in the midst of your tests and your trials and your difficulties. Now, I thought a long time about how to represent this. And sometimes I do better than others. I think this is going to be a good one. Some of you like the drawings. Not everybody. That's okay. The rest of you can endure this right now as a trial and test of your faith. People, people, people. So here's the deal. You know this, and this is what James was saying. You know, when you're talking about growth and the leadership types among you, the people that you like reading self-help stuff, you like reading growth. I mean, you know this, and you know, you can appreciate this. In fact, I think you're going to love this graph. It involves two things. Growth involves two things. And I learned this years ago. It involves challenge and it involves perseverance. Challenge and perseverance. In fact, you grow best in environments of challenge and contradiction. I had a psychologist that taught me this years ago. In terms of your growth, if you want to grow, you have to have resistance. And you know this in weight training, anything else. You have to face challenges. You have to face difficulties. You have to work through those and overcome. That's how you grow. And this growth happens best when you experience challenge and perseverance. And the truth is the greater the challenge and the greater the perseverance, the greater the growth. But it doesn't always happen because of what we acknowledged earlier. It's because many of us, we're in a situation where we're comfortable. And comfort is a low level of challenge, and it takes very little perseverance. And the truth is once we move beyond our comfort zone, we begin to experience tension. And we either retreat back to our comfort zone, or we try to invent something or create something to relieve that tension. And what happens is, what James is saying, if you don't continue to experience that tension and allow it to grow and live in the midst of that, because here's what happens. You have a threshold. You have a threshold for discomfort. And that threshold, by the way, you don't realize this, but that threshold can grow. It can move outward. You have a threshold for discomfort. And when you move beyond that and you accept the tension, not go far beyond it, because the truth is you can embrace too much and you have a threshold for resilience. That's also something that can grow. Your resilience can grow. This is more for another day. We'll come back to this another day. But your comfort, when you move beyond that and you feel this tension, what happens is you move towards your potential. You move towards not just the potential of what you want to be, but the potential of what you were designed to be, what you were designed to experience. Here's the challenge. The challenge is that comfort makes us complacent. And when we stay in our comfort zone, we become complacent. We don't want to move into the tension, because here's what happens in the tension. And it's specifically when it comes to tests of faith, when it comes to tests of obedience and following God. The truth is our tension, and this is what James is saying, it's a test of our faith. And when you persevere and you trust and that test of faith, what happens is then you move towards this thing over here that we talked about over here. You move towards being fulfilled. You become fulfilled in not only in life in terms of a feeling of fulfillment, but your potential becomes realized. It becomes fulfilled. You grow. Now, we have all sorts of examples of this. And by the way, one more thing I'll just say is this doesn't happen all in this graph. The truth is this is how this works. It works in a very specific zone that we grow in, because, and you know this, if there's very little challenge, but you're acting like you're persevering, you've seen people do this. They've got almost no weight and they're acting like they're struggling to work out. And it's like, that's not that heavy. Like, you know, or they're dealing with something in life and they're making such a big deal about it. And you're like, that is not a big deal. That is the definition of a first world problem. You're like, you don't feel bad for them, and they're not growing. That's this zone up here. And down here, when people are experiencing extreme challenge and they quit, they medicate, they escape, they run away. The truth is they forfeit this process of growth and this potential of them becoming what they could be. There's a neuroscientist. Some of you have heard of him, Dr. Andrew Huberman. He has a podcast called The Huberman Lab. And I was recently listening to him talk about this on one of his podcasts. And he was talking about one of the most important discoveries he believes that's happened in neuroscience in his lifetime. And it has to do with this. And it's extraordinary, because what he talks about is he talks about the anterior mid-cingulate cortex. The anterior mid-cingulate cortex is this part of your brain that helps you to push through challenges, through difficulty, especially when they're uncomfortable, especially when they're things you don't want to do. when everything in you is resisting it, this part of your brain, the anterior mid-cingulate cortex, it's the part of your brain that helps you push through that. Now, here's the discovery. Is what's recently been discovered is when you voluntarily, when you choose to do hard things, when you don't move away from those things, whether it's exercising, whether it's a tough task, having a hard conversation, taking a cold plunge. Now, if you like that type of stuff, it doesn't really work. You're just a glutton for punishment. But if it's something you don't like and you don't want to do and you press through and you do it anyway, this part of your brain is activated. It's not only activated, the more that it's activated, the more it grows. And the more often it's activated, the stronger and the more efficient it becomes. It works like a muscle. And again, it's especially when it's things that you don't want to do. And it causes, over time, it makes it easier for you to handle stress, to stay focused, to keep going forward and keep moving in the midst of life's challenges, especially when they intensify, when they become, you know, unbearable. And you're in the midst of things when this has been tested and it's been challenged and it grows. It helps you press through those things. Now, here's the kicker. This was discovered in a longevity study. They're trying to figure out, you know, people who live the longest, what's unique about their brains. This was the study. And it turns out the size of the anterior mid-cingulate cortex in people who live the longest is the largest. It's the largest in the people who live the longest, and it's the largest in people who maintain greater cognitive ability later in life. And you can grow it by choosing hard things, by choosing to face those trials. And this is what James is saying. I mean, knowing this, when you choose hard things, it builds this physical, mental, emotional strength. We know this from science, and it builds resilience. Now, based on that, what James is saying is not that strange. When you understand how your body actually works and how your brain works, when he says, consider it pure joy when you have to face those trials, because now you know what it produces, it doesn't seem so strange. Now, I don't believe James understood the neuroscience, but I do believe that James knew something important. He knew that the tension was important, and he knew the tension point in our lives is often the focal point of God's activity in our lives. The tension point that you feel, the difficulty you feel, the tension or the trial you're facing, I'm not saying God caused it, but what I am saying is that is oftentimes the focal point of God's activity. When you feel a tension, you don't want to relieve that tension because I believe God's up to something. And his history with humanity, his history with his people, it proves it. When God chose Abraham to create a new nation, to ultimately rescue the entire world, he asked him to leave his home and his family for an undisclosed location, and it was not an easy journey. When he chose to use Joseph to rescue his family because that was in the midst of a famine, they were going to go through some very difficult times, he first allowed him to be thrown in a cistern and then sold into slavery and shipped off to Egypt. When he chose to make David a king, which I don't know if you've watched House of David, but me and in our house, we've loved it. When he chose to make David a king, he didn't bring him a crown or he didn't bring him a throne. He brought him Goliath. And the same is true for you. For many of you, when you tell your faith story, it involves trials. It involves challenges. And the same is true for us. You've experienced this. You've experienced it in your family. You've experienced it in your marriage. You've experienced it in your business. And those trials and those challenges, they've been productive. And many of you, your faith story is that God met you in that. And he did something he just doesn't do any other way. I've talked about this a lot. My family, when we... Jen and I first got married, we were trying to decide, we had a mentor couple that talked to us about what our family values were. And so we came up with a list of our family values. They were like, you should document them. If you don't document them, you don't live by them, you know, they won't become true. And we really wanted to pass some things on to our kids, specifically that our families had passed on us. And one of our values was we do hard things. And again, all these years ago, we wrote down, we do hard things. Now, if I could change that, I felt like that was a test to God. I wish I could change that to, we can do hard things. We don't have to do hard things all the time, but we can do hard things. But we wrote the value, we do hard things, and our commitment to that. And our commitment to radical obedience, even when it was hard, is what led us to the desert, literally. And I've shared this with some of you, not everybody, but the truth is it took us on a quest out west. We lived in a neighborhood with my brother and my sister and their families, and life was comfortable, and it was convenient, and it was good here in Atlanta. And circumstances I don't have the time to detail out today, we knew. In fact, as we told people around us and we got wise counsel, people around us told us, no, this is an obedience thing. And I remember thinking, okay, what's the cost of being disobedient to God? And I counted the cost because I knew it was going to be hard. I knew it was going to be difficult. I walked into a very difficult situation. And it was probably the hardest season, to that point for sure, the hardest season we'd ever experienced in our lives. But it led to a massive amount of growth. We had little kids that went with us. Our oldest was probably the only one old enough to remember all the difficulty when we first moved there and when we first started dealing with all the challenge and difficulty, not just of moving to a new place, but the church that I came into was in a very difficult season, and we didn't know anybody. And shortly after we got there, we got pregnant with our fourth child, and life was just, it felt overwhelming. Fast forward 7 years later, some of you know we have bigs and littles, and our two older kids, we told them we need to have a family meeting, but we need to have it without the littles. They were really little at the time, so we put them to bed, and they're sort of like wide-eyed. We sit down, and we're like, hey, we're praying. We're sensing God might be leading us to a different season and to a different place. And they're like, okay, well, what does that look like? And we're like, well, we may be moving back to the Atlanta area. And they both were like, whoa. And, you know, at the time, my daughter was going into eighth grade, and my son was going into ninth grade. Two really tough times to move. And they both had a lot to lose, truthfully. You know, they were both thriving. They had great relationships at church and in school. And they were thriving in dance and soccer and activities. And we lived in a great neighborhood. They had friends in the neighborhood. And they had a lot to lose and a lot to give up. And when my daughter, who's the adventurous one, we first said, hey, we're just praying. We're just praying that God would be clear to us what we should do, what he wants us to do in the midst of this. Because we think this potentially could be hard. And even though it felt like it was moving home, we knew the whole world would be different. We knew it would be difficult for our kids. And so I told them we were praying. My daughter was like, she's the adventurous one. She's like, well, I think it could be fun. And I'm like, that's because you haven't faced anything hard in your life yet. So, and my son, again, who was the only one old enough to really remember the difficulty of when we first showed up there 7 years earlier, he said, it's true, Dad, I don't know that this will be easy. And we do have a lot to lose. But the last time we did what God wanted us to do, it worked out pretty well for us. So I'm going to pray. But we'll know exactly what God wants us to do. And I could not have imagined all that God would do in us and in our kids in these recent years since we moved back. I'll just tell you, it's been hard. It's been challenging. We've been through some hard things. But watching what God's done in our family and what he's done in my kids, I look back, knowing what I know now, and I think, what a joy. Last week, we celebrated graduation. Our oldest graduated. I'm a little bit weepy because you know how that is. It's our first one going off to college. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I probably needed that at this moment in the sermon. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's a great accomplishment, but I'm more proud of the young man that he is. And I'll just tell you this. I don't think it's by any coincidence. I think it's because of the challenge that we've watched him go through. The difficulty of moving back and finding a whole new group of friends and having to give up sports, a sport that he loved, and try to do something new. It was all of that challenge, and I see what God has forged in him. And as his dad, the thing that makes me emotional is he's ready. He's ready to go off. Like, I feel confident. And there's part of me that could take some credit, but I'm too smart for that. I just know that God has used the challenge that he's experienced in his young life to prepare him for what he has for him next. See, here's the thing. That never ends. You have no idea what God wants to do, what he could do, what he will do. Some of you are in the midst of some very challenging things. And I know this. Some of you, you're in the midst of a job loss. Maybe you've received a scary diagnosis. You've lost a loved one. Some of you are watching wayward kids. You did all the same things we did in your family. And you're watching wayward kids and you can't rescue them from the things that they're walking towards. Some of you are dealing with betrayal from a coworker, from a boss, from a friend. Some of you are reeling from infidelity or abandonment by a spouse. For some of you, it's not something you did, but something that was done to you. It's something that you fell into. It's like the trials that James was talking about. And it's testing your faith. And for you, responding in the right way, responding the way you know you ought to, in the best way, the healthiest way for you, and the healthiest way for your future and for those around you. It's hard. It's really difficult to do the next right thing. In fact, in some cases, doing the next right thing, what you should do is exactly what you don't want to do. And it represents an opportunity for you to grow into who God wants to form you into. It takes me back to the unpopular promise of Jesus. He said, in this world, you will have trouble. You will. You don't have to try to escape it. You can't escape it. Some of you, you know this. In fact, this is like the most obvious thing. You already knew this. You've already discovered this in life. But what no one told you is you have a choice. You have a choice. Every day you have a choice of what hard you're going to choose. I recently heard a poem. Some of you have heard this before. I heard it. It was quoted by a NFL GM at a commencement speech. And it's short. The poem's called Choose Your Hard. And it says this: marriage is hard and divorce is hard. Choose your hard. Obesity is hard and staying fit is hard. Choose your hard. Being in debt is hard and being financially disciplined is hard. Choose your hard. Communicating is hard and not communicating is hard. Choose your hard. Now, I don't know the author, or else I would have tried to get permission, but I'd like to add a few of my own, because I have experienced a few myself. And some of you, you're facing different things. Facing reality is hard, and choosing to live in denial is hard. Choose your hard. Dealing with your past is hard, and your past dealing with you is hard. Choose your hard. Creating healthy boundaries is hard, and not having healthy boundaries is hard. Choose your hard. Living in truth is hard. Living a lie is hard. Forgiveness is hard, and bitterness is hard. Rebuilding trust is hard, and a relationship without trust is hard. Choose your hard. Grieving is hard, and avoiding grief is hard. Choosing joy is hard, and spiraling in despair is hard. Choose your hard. At times, life feels unbearable. Many of us have been there. I know I have. James says, look, don't stop. Persevere. And if you'll persevere and you'll let it do its work, it'll complete. It'll bring to fulfillment the work God is wanting to do in you, to grow you, to complete you. God is doing something new. He's forming something new in you. And it may feel like you're taking a beating. So really quick, for the feelers in the room, this was for all the thinkers in the room, for the feelers in the room, I want to give you a different picture. The truth is several years ago, some of you, say, how many of you know Louis Giglio? Louis Giglio is a preacher in town. We used to do ministry together, and we were together. How about 722? Anybody 722 people? All of our camps? All right. So we got people that were around in the 722 days. I went to coffee one time with Louis. And I was looking for some encouragement, which Louis can be an encouraging guy. This isn't an illustration to bash Louis. You'll see in a second. It turned out really good. But I went to coffee with Louis to get some encouragement. I was going through some difficult things in that season of my life. And I told him, I said, listen, I'm really struggling right now. And I was going through a relationship breakup, and I was going through some disappointment in my career. And I kind of wasn't happy with where I was in my life. And I'll never forget, we as we went to to coffee. He listened, and he listened patiently. He listened to my whole sob story, and he got the end of my sob story. At the end of my sob story, he looked me dead in the eye. No joke. This is no joke. He looked me dead in the eye, and he said, you know what? It's good for you to be on the anvil every once in a while. And I was like, I think I invited the wrong guy to coffee. This isn't what I was expecting. And you would think more explanation came than that. There was not much more explanation than that. He basically said, this is a good thing for you. It's good for you to be on the anvil. It's good for you every once in a while. I know it's challenging. It feels like you're taking a beating. You know why that is? It's because you are. Sometimes life feels like you're taking a beating. And he said, you are. But here's the thing I want you to know. That can be productive. God can be at work in the midst of that. And I struggle with that. And it took me years to really understand why would he even say something like me? It didn't even feel kind. But here's what I realized he meant. Is at times when you're taking a beating, you can feel like you're getting pounded. But you're really being formed. That's what it is to be on the anvil. When you're on the anvil and it feels like life, you're taking a beating and it's one thing after the next and it just feels like it comes in waves, specifically in threes. I don't know if anybody gets that. Like, it's just like, what is going on? And you feel like you're taking a beating, but God's forming you. And here's what you need to know. You're not alone. There's a second part to this promise of Jesus. He said, in this world you have trouble, but take heart because I have overcome the world. And this is why the Jesus followers, James, his brother, says, look, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. With Christ, not only can you face and overcome the inevitable hard things in life, the truth is you can be sure that God will use it to grow you and shape you, to complete the work he began when he first chose you and led you to faith in him. In reality, the first Jesus followers, their overcoming, persevering faith, it's what led to widespread faith in Jesus across the globe. It went from hundreds to thousands to millions to billions of people, and their faith is why we have the churches we have today. And that faith was passed down from one generation to the next in the midst of a world where there's trouble and there's difficulty. And their enduring, persevering faith, it led to growth that people noticed. And they took notice of, and they realized this is a God to be trusted. So here's the thing. Here's how I want to finish. I want to finish the first part of our series, Challenge Accepted, with a challenge, should you choose to accept it. If you're currently facing a trial, you're in a challenging season, it's testing you. Here's what I'm going to ask. Would you just, without looking at somebody next to you, without waiting for somebody else, with 2 seconds of insane courage, would you stand so I could pray for you? I know in a group this size and with all of our churches and churches across the country, around the world, I know there's lots of you. This is what we don't have the eyes to see. We don't have the eyes to see when we show up at places like this. Everybody's dealing with something. And some people are dealing with really intense things and really difficult things in their lives. Thank you. Thank you. The truth is I want to pray for you today. And it's not important that I see you if you're at one of our other campuses or another location. God sees you. And you're standing today and saying, God, I want your help. I know you want to use this. And so until you choose to remove it, I want to surrender to you and allow you to use it to grow me and shape me and form me into who you want me to be. I want to pray for you for clarity and for wisdom and for perseverance in the midst of what you're in. And ultimately, that God will give you peace. Peace that doesn't make sense because in what you're in the middle of. But peace to continue to walk through it. Before I pray, I want the rest of us to stand with them in solidarity, but also so that they recognize that there's a group of people that God's already brought around them that are standing with them in the midst that they're in. And someday it'll be somebody else, and it'll be their turn to stand next to somebody else that's going through something difficult. If you saw somebody you recognize, you might just want to encourage them. You don't need to pry. You don't need to know what's going on in their life. But you just might want to pray for them. If you don't know them, you can pray for them by the color of their shirt if you want to. But I want to pray. And I want to ask God for his wisdom, which is what James says right after this. He says, you ask God for wisdom and he'll grant it. He gives it generously. Let me pray for you. God, thank you today for these people who've had the courage to stand. I pray that they would know, in this moment that you see them. You hear their prayers. You're with them. And you're working. Their persevering faith honors you. Their willingness to just stand the challenge, to do that hard thing today in front of a whole group of people, it honors you. I pray that you would strengthen them from within, that you'd guard them and that you'd guide them. You'd help them to persevere and that you give them peace in the midst of the struggle, knowing that you are with them, knowing that you've already overcome it, knowing you know how it ends and that you are at work. And I pray it in Jesus' name.